Blog Talk Radio.
Here on Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. I am Sandy Rogers, and I will serve as your hostess tonight. You know, I get so excited every Tuesday to present this show and the absolutely fantastic, wonderful guests that agree to show up and share their knowledge with you. So thank you for being a part of Life, Love, and Wellness. And again, I get so excited, so excited. There's a couple of things, though, that we always do to make sure that we're in alignment energetically before we get started. So the first thing, we always give thanks to our ancestors for being with us, for always showing up, and especially on Tuesday nights as we discuss issues that we don't ordinarily talk about in an open setting. So we know that we stand on the shoulders of our ancestors for strength. We trust our ancestors got our backs as we move forward. And so, ancestors, we love you now. We love you forever. Ashe, ashe. We've got a new ancestor, a friend of mine, Jimmy Desmuke. So we're adding him to the ancestors' role tonight. Hey, Jimmy. And next, we anchor ourselves in positive energy and affirmative reading. And you know that these come from my daily inspirational messages, which you can find at revsandy.wordpress.com. Sometimes it's referred to as a prayer. And so I'm only going to read you a small portion. If you're interested in reading the daily inspirational messages or having them delivered to your email every morning, just go to that site, revsandy.wordpress.com. This particular message is called artificial stimulation. Artificial stimulation is anything and everything that is on the outside of you. Our stimulation comes from the inside of us. It comes from our core of being. I accept that true stimulation comes from infinite source. And again, that is my daily inspirational message, but just a small portion for you. And if you're interested, go to revsandy.wordpress.com, and it allows you to sign up to receive it automatically in your email every morning. So it's all about life, it's all about love, and it's all about wellness. So tonight's show is simply called The Truth Reveal, and I am so honored and blessed to have Dr. Victor Muhammad to be our featured guest tonight, and he is going to share just a ton of information and knowledge with you. Make sure you got your paper and ink pen so that you can take notes. I know I always take notes when I listen to him. So he's powerful. He's powerful. So just keep that one right there, right? So audience, you know you're always invited to join in the discussion, and all comments are always welcomed, and every voice will be heard. However, no foul, profane, or vulgar language is allowed. And if you so choose, then you will be automatically cut off the show. So that's just the rule of thumb here, right? So our call-in number, in case you don't have it, is 516-531-9819. And you would simply press 1 to alert me you want to speak live on air with us. And to ensure high-quality playback, because you can always go back on blogtalkradio.com / Sandy Rogers, and you can always listen to any of the shows. And so to make sure that we have the best possible connection, if your line is open, and I normally leave it open, just make sure that you mute your phone when you're not talking. All right? Good, good, good. So you're listening to Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. We're going to do a musical break right now. And then when we come back, we're getting directly in to Dr. Muhammad, and you guys will understand why I am so excited that he's taking time from out of his schedule to be with us tonight. So let's go for just a little music, and here we come back. We'll see you in a minute.
On the oceans and upon our seas, fish full of mercury. Oh, oh, mercy, mercy me, all things ain't what they used to be. No, no. Radiation underground and in the sky, animals and birds who live nearby are alive. All things and what they used to be. What about this overcrowded land? How much more we use from man? Can't you stand?
Guys, know that's Marvin Gaye, Mercy, Mercy Me, things ain't what they used to be. So that was our little musical interlude for you. And welcome back. Welcome back to Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. And once again, you know, you're welcome to call and chat on air with us at 516-531-9819. You would press 1 to signal you wish to speak live on air with us. So our topic today is The Truth Revealed with Dr. Victor Muhammad. He has more than 31 years of scientific research, and he shares from his storehouse of knowledge with us on some crucial topics concerning our health and wellness. So HIV/AIDS 2019 is the Black community still in crisis. That is a lecture series that he's going to be doing, and he's going to be talking to us from that as one of his standpoints. And so you will understand what he's saying to you. No big, big words, just really straight from the heart to you. And so, Dr. Muhammad, it is my sincere pleasure to welcome you to Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. Would you please tell the audience who you are?
Yes, in the name of God, the most gracious, the most merciful. My name is Victor Muhammad, and I am an agricultural and biomedical research scientist. I say because that may sound like a big difference or a wide expanse between the two areas, but in reality, they are not. I grew up on a farm in Mississippi, and I majored in agriculture, animal science, and physiology in college. But the vast majority of my work has been in biomedical research. So because of that, both endeavors and for being what they are, I guess the best way to describe me is I'm more so a humanitarian who happens to have an agricultural and science background. But I think I'm more a humanitarian than anything else, because the choices that I've made, probably going back to 1990, when I first started in biomedical research, has led me down the path that I've traveled for the last 31 years. Because of the choices that I've made, I have lived a very difficult life. And I can't deny that. And just recently, maybe 2 weeks ago, someone asked me, Victor, if you had it to do all over again, what would you change? Meaning the choices that I've made, because some people close to me have seen some of the difficulties I've experienced. And they ask me if I would change it, if I had it to do all over again. And without thinking, I said no. Because, yes, I have had difficulties, and I still have difficulties. Even to this day, I have difficulties. But for moral code. And I sleep well at night. I don't need a sleep aid to help me sleep. I don't belong to a gym because I don't need to work out. And I don't need drugs because I work so hard during the day that I can literally stand in one spot and fall asleep. Literally. That's how hard I work. And so I wouldn't trade my moral code and my ethics and principles for all the money that is printed. So no, I wouldn't change anything about the choices that I've made. So I think that's the best description that I can give this sister to give your listening audience an idea of who I am.
I appreciate that. Again, it's to the point, and it's, to me, broad enough to let people see into your heart and into your passion for the work that you've done. And so I appreciate your introduction to the audience. And in the work that you've done over the last 31 years, my understanding from having listened to you twice before is that you take a very different stance when it comes to diseases, especially as they apply to the African-American community. Would that sum up your work that you've been doing? Or
I think that it gives a very good description of what I've been doing, yes.
So tell us about some of the research.
Well, in 1993, I was offered a job with the Holland Laboratory in Rockville, Maryland, which is the research arm of the Red Cross. And the gentleman who hired me came to me after he had hired me, and he said, "Victor, I did a search among the literature for you for publications." And he said, "I didn't find anything." I said, "Well, you won't find anything because even those projects where I did participate as an investigator, my name was left off the publication because of who I am."
Wow.
I said, when I worked at the National Institutes of Health, I can't say disliked, but they were so dissatisfied that I was there that they killed an entire research program just so that they would not have to renew my contract. Mm-hmm. And so there were some projects on which I worked where we were investigating the genetics of HIV. And we were examining some of the genes that were expressed in HIV by using animal models. Some of the research took consideration for renal failure, kidney disease, as a result of HIV and infections and things like that. And there were a lot of publications generated from that research, but my name was purposefully left off that research simply because I was Muslim. Mm. And secondly, because I am a black man. And at that time, at NIH, we're talking about 30 years ago, there were only two of us in the entire institute. And that was my supervisor, who was a black veterinarian from Tuskegee who had gone into research, and myself, an animal scientist from a black college in Mississippi. And we were the only professional black men in the institute, in the building that we were in. And so they didn't like that. And they showed their dislike for that by leaving my name off the publications. So I told the guy who came to me, I said, "Well, you won't find any publications per se with my name on it. There are publications out there because if you do a search with my name, it will pull up publications. It will retrieve publications, but none that you're going to find in a major journal." Because I've never thought in reality to be recognized in those journals because I've really never agreed with the research that's being done going all the way back to 1990. Because sitting at the table on Thursday morning when we would have journal club meeting, and the journal club meeting for scientists is when you discuss the forward motion and the progress of your research. You examine the decisions that you've made up to this point. And then you decide whether or not you need to make changes, whether you need to do this and do that or whatnot. And I knew that I did believe in that research, and I don't believe in that research today. I understand what you hear on CNN and Nightline and all the news, and I understand what you read in the newspapers and everything, but most of that is probably suspect, and it probably would not withstand scrutiny if the right person challenged it. But the scientific community is one of those communities where if you challenge it, then it could end your career. So there are people like me who know that most of what's going on in scientific is the best word I could use. I'll just say it's suspect, and I don't have faith in it at all. And if the listening audience and public knew what I knew, then you would share the same sentiment.
Thank you for that. It sounds all too familiar, you know. So we've had in our lifetime, or maybe our parents' lifetime, we've had the Tuskegee experiment where some unscrupulous practices were forced into our people. And it appears that from listening to what you're saying and knowing some of the history behind the HIV community and that whole market is what it is to me, there seems to be discrepancy still with that, but, you know, discrepancy that has been planned. I know that some of the medications, when they first started with being able to treat, or saying that they could treat the HIV virus, was that medication called AZT. And AZT, my understanding is that a white man would be cured from the AIDS virus, AIDS disease, but that the same amount of medication would actually kill a black man. And but it was, you know, a length of time before that was discovered and addressed by the medical community. And so and I know I'm putting a lot into a short sentence here, but I also see the effects of the current HIV medications on loved ones of mine, of the people that I worked with in the HIV community, both here in Atlanta and in California, and their bodies are distorted, and it appears that it's really taken a horrible hold on my loved ones' lives, you know, and so they're suffering as a result. But it's and so that's what intrigued me so when I first heard you talk about the research that you've done into that. That health concern, the HIV and AIDS. I've heard doctors from Africa talk about, you know, there are cures that they have in their plants there. So, Jada.
Well, there, I can't speak to the efficacy of what is being claimed from people from Africa, and I've been approached by people who brought information to me about another doctor. I think he's in the Caribbean, maybe, and they say that he has cured HIV and AIDS. I don't know about that. And I can't speak to that. I have worked with HIV since 1991. And what I have found is that that I agree with much of what has been published in the literature about the AIDS virus. I do believe that the AIDS virus, naturally occurring entity, and as such, I don't believe that it possesses the hybrid vigor that a naturally occurring entity would possess. And what I mean by hybrid vigor, if you take a thoroughbred horse, maybe he's worth $3 million. And you take a Mustang that someone would give you $300 just to take it. But the Mustang is a much more durable entity and has far more hybrid vigor, meaning he can tolerate much more stress than the $3 million thoroughbred can tolerate, because the Mustang is a naturally occurring entity. The thoroughbred is a thoroughbred because he has undergone many generations of line breeding and breeding, specific breeding, and a great portion of his tolerance has been bred out of him. And so when I reviewed the HIV, the human immunodeficiency virus, going back to 1991, I found that it is not as durable as, let's say, influenza or the rhinovirus, which causes the cold, or the flu. And so are discrepancies about that. Some of them, I'm not prepared to speak on them right now because I would need to do more research and I would need to be able to lay a foundation before saying certain things, because sometimes the truth out of context is more dangerous than an atom bomb. And the more truth that God gives to you as an individual, the more responsible you must be in the application and dispensation of that truth. So when you find a person who talks a lot, then it's probably because they don't have very much to say. So beware. The HIV, we started using a naturally occurring protein that was isolated back in the late and mid-1950s called interferon alpha. And it was a black man in Nairobi, Kenya, Dr. David Coage, at the Kenyan Medical Research Institute in Nairobi back in the 1980s, who took the research of a veterinarian from Amarillo, Texas, who had used interferon alpha to treat some calves that had a bovine viral infection. Dr. Coage had an epidemic in Nairobi of sex workers who had contracted HIV and developed AIDS. Dr. Coage began treating these sex workers with interferon alpha, and he found that at a certain dosage, it was very effective in reducing and arresting the effects of HIV and AIDS. And we heard about and this work that Dr. Coach was doing in Nairobi. And in 1990, I believe, Minister Farrakhan sent Dr. Abdul Aleem Muhammad, the editor, former editor of The Final Call, Brother Waleed Muhammad, and Dr. Barbara Justice from the Harlem Hospital in Harlem, New York, to Nairobi to investigate Dr. Coach's work. When they returned, Dr. Muhammad announced to Minister Farrakhan that he found that Dr. Coach's work was as efficacious as he had claimed. And so Dr. Muhammad began treating his patients in Washington, D.C. with the lozenges that he had brought back from Nairobi. And he found that the lozenges were 82% effective in arresting the phenotypes and genotypes of HIV and AIDS. In November 1994, I was working as a researcher at Howard University's med school and cancer center. I received a phone call from Dr. Muhammad in November 1994. He told me during the conversation that I believe FDA had confiscated the interferon lozenges that had arrived, I believe, at Dulles Airport. Mm-hmm. And the patients in his clinic and around the country were suffering because they could not get the medication to them. So he asked me if I could do anything to help. So my initial response as a researcher was, I said, I don't know. And you always say you don't know because you don't know. You believe that you can, but it's safer and more humble to say you don't know rather than painting yourself in the corner and saying, yes, I can help, and then having to go back and say, you know what, I can't. So I went and I got my immunology books from graduate school, and I found a section that dealt with interferon alpha and the production of interferon alpha in the human body. I saw the concentration at which the body normally produces interferon alpha, and I extrapolated, meaning I calculated that into an international unit calculation. And I put that in a liquid form because I knew that it is almost impossible to put that concentration in a pill. Now, they were getting positive results, but when you study a math called biomechanics, you know that it's not reasonable to think that you can put a small concentration of medication in a lozenge and it be consistent and stable. So I made a liquid version based upon the work of Dr. Kowich. I did not originate it, the use of interferon for treating HIV. But what I did originate was putting it in a liquid format. And I gave that to Dr. Muhammad in December 1994. A week later, he called me, and he was elated. The patients were up. They were walking around. Their CD4 counts were rising. The viral load was decreasing. They had developed an appetite, which is good, and they were gaining weight. And so from December 1994 until August 2002, these patients were receiving this liquid interferon. And by August 2002, 8 of those patients had serodeconverted. Now, what serodeconvert means is that when you are walking around without being HIV infected, you are seronegative for HIV. But once you become infected, you are now seropositive. So you've seroconverted from being HIV negative to becoming HIV positive. Now, when you reach a point where the virus is no longer detectable in your body, that is called serodeconverting, meaning you are now returning to being HIV negative. So by August 2002, had seroconverted, meaning the virus was no longer detectable in their bodies. That's a synopsis of the history. There's a lot more to it than that, but for the sake of time, that's all that I'll share at this point about that.
Sure. And that's been 17 years ago. So is Dr. Muhammad, is he still using the liquid, the interferon alpha that you created?
I don't know. I spoke with him last year for the first time since 2008, and I don't know. He's still in Washington, D.C., so if there's anyone listening who wants to get in touch with him, he still has the Abundant Life Clinic in Washington, D.C., and I believe that he's on Facebook, Abundant Life Clinic. So if someone wants to get in touch with him, they can do that. But I don't know, because I think he's doing something in South Africa now with the interferon, but I can't say with accuracy what he's doing.
Okay. Well, thank you for that in-depth on how it works and the steps that a person goes through to what we would call reversing, being undetectable. So I appreciate it, you breaking that down, because I actually didn't even know the different steps that a person goes through to get to that stage.
Mm-hmm.
And so what would be your strategy, or what would be your moves in getting this this treatment to more people? Do you have a strategy?
We have one, but let me share with the listening audience some facts. As Public Enemy used to say back in the 90s, let's kick the ballistics. About a month ago, maybe, I was contacted by an individual who I'm assisting with a health issue. And he wanted me to give him a critique of his health. And I said to him, most likely I can solve your problem. I said, but I don't have a laboratory. Neither do I have the resources to investigate it. I said, you just returned from a trip, and there were many people at this who also attended this meeting. And all of you were African American. And most likely you spent maybe as much as $3 to $6 million over the you were at this meeting. And the Asians, the Anglos, and the Jews in that area took as much as 95% of all the money that all of you took to that area. And you brought back nothing to show for your participation there. Yet, you call me and ask for my help to analyze your health, and I'm qualified to do it. But I don't even have a 30 square foot, so how is it that you think I can solve your problem when if you and those like you who attended this meeting, if I had 1% of the money that you all spent that all these other communities got now, then I could take $100,000 and rent a space and build a 300 square foot lab. I don't need the elaborate labs that other people have, because most of that is just show. But if I had the lab the size of the average bathroom in an apartment, I believe that I could solve probably 85% of the world's health problems. I didn't make a mistake in what I just said. I measure my words carefully. I know what I just said, and I intend exactly what I said. Because the health problems from which the world is suffering, they are not difficult to solve. And many of them, if not most, have the same pathology. So when you solve one of them, you can solve a whole lot of them all at the same time. So my point to this brother was, this man was, if I had a 1% of the money that you all just spent over a 3-day period, 1% of that money, then look at what someone like me would be able to do, not just for the African-American community, but the Hispanic community in America, the Caucasian community in America, the Asian community in America, and those in Africa, Central America, South America, the Caribbean, and Asia. You see. But Harvard, the Harvard School of Business, about 3 years ago, sister, did a study of venture capitalists and the projects that they fund in America. Harvard University School of Business reported that if a project comes before venture capitalists for funding in America, if there is not one Caucasian male on the board or in management, then that project is not funded.
Wow.
Now, so does it surprise anyone that you have a person like a Victor Muhammad who has the credentials, the qualification, the skill, the know-how, the will, the desire to solve the problems of the health community, but the resources are kept away from me? So when we see the things that we see every day, Sister Sandy, these are not necessarily mistakes, nor are they accidents, nor are they coincidences. Any human being who studies mathematics and science, you know that there is no such thing as a coincidence.
Right. To really chew on right there. You guys are being, we're all being educated right now. So, again, take your notes. You can call and ask questions if you'd like at 516-531-9819. This is Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. And we have with us, speaking so eloquently and providing us with a clear, concise picture of the landscape of this biomedical science and some of the other work that he's done is Dr. Victor Muhammad. And we call this series tonight, The Truth Revealed. And there's so much that goes into this. And so, Dr. Muhammad, we really appreciate you breaking this down for us. And so your new lecture series is called HIV and AIDS 2019, Is the Black Community Still in Crisis? Can you give us a reason that you created this particular series, and what are your intentions with sharing that with the community?
Well, the average person in the African-American community does not read. And those who do read, the type of things that we read, we have to measure those things that we read and ask ourselves, what gaining from what we read? I won't name any particular things because I don't want to come across as biased. But when we read the kind of things that you see us reading, you must ask yourself, how does this benefit you?
Right.
Does this increase your knowledge base? No one can give you knowledge. People can give you information, and you process that information and turn it into a thing that has utility, and then it becomes knowledge. And so the things that we read, we can impress each other with it by being able to pontificate it and roll off the information, out of our mouth. But at the end of the day, work is defined by W equals F times D. Do something, or when you say something, if it doesn't generate a product, good, or service, then it's not work, and it's a waste of time. So when you examine many of the things that we do in the African American community, there is no product, good, or service generated by it. Therefore, it's a waste of time. And so the review 40 years ago or 35 years ago of HIV and AIDS, then about 25 years ago, it reached an apex in the so-called African-American community. Then in the last 10 years, it's kind of not that the infections have decreased, but the clamor around the subject has sort of dissipated. So you don't hear it being discussed as much anymore. But has it gone anywhere? And according to CDC and the state health departments across the 50 states, then no, it hasn't. And according to the CDC and the different state health departments, the Black community is still in a crisis mode when it comes to HIV. But how often today do you hear it in the so-called African-American community? You would think that is no longer a problem.
Right.
Because you don't hear it being discussed anymore. And so out of sight, out of mind. And if we are not discussing it anymore, and if it's not being presented on television the way it was 15 years ago, 20 years ago, then does that mean that the people have resumed their normal activity? And according to what I see through personal observation, I haven't done any research because I don't have the resources to do the research. But based upon personal observation on what I see on a daily basis, then I can only draw the conclusion that we have resumed the same activity that we were doing back in 1978 when all you had to do was go to the health department or the clinic, pull your pants down, get a shot in your rump, and pull your pants up, and now you're cured. And so it appears from personal observation that that's what we've resumed, and that's what we're now doing. Because HIV and AIDS no longer carry the clamor that it did 20 years ago. You see? So someone needs to blow the whistle and remind us that this is still, and as a matter of fact, 3 months ago, it was reported in Atlanta that the HIV infection rate among the Black community is at a crisis, an epidemic proportion.
Exactly.
Right downtown Atlanta. But we are running out to see movies that some could argue is buffoonery, you see. Right there in Atlanta. No one wants to say it, but that's what it is. So we line up to see movies. You see. But we won't line up to hear a discussion or to hear a lecture or to hear someone talk to us about something that's killing us, literally killing us. But we'll line up to go and see something that you can laugh at that's probably not funny.
True. So let me ask your opinion on, this is one thing that has given me some concern over the years, and maybe you can shed some light on it. My understanding of the HIV and AIDS virus, its origin was in the white gay community, reportedly in the Bay Area of California. And for a while, 10, 15 years ago, it was almost like an equal number of white folks and black folks being infected. And then it started changing so that, you know, there's more blacks or African Americans that are affected and infected now, and the numbers are rising and rising and rising. And I think Atlanta is number 3 or something like that nationally. And so how did our numbers increase so rapidly, where it appears that the other cultures are not impacted as heavily as we are?
Well, that is, you made some statements prior to asking your question that I'm not sure are accurate, and I would not make those statements because I don't know them to be accurate. I don't know that HIV began in the Caucasian gay community, because if the truth be told, I don't think anyone can verify that. Because, quite frankly, we don't know where HIV first appeared. And so I couldn't speak to that because I don't know. With regard to the HIV numbers in the so-called African American community, maybe 60 years ago, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad in the Nation of Islam, don't know if he instructed the sisters or he advised the sisters, because I can't remember the language, but I do know that he did say to the sisters who were members of the Nation of Islam, he said to them, get rid of your white male doctors. Get a black female doctor. This is what he said to the sisters who were members of the Nation of Islam. Mm-hmm. And so right now, cross-section of the African-American community and the African-American woman, you would find that a great number, maybe as much as 60% or more, I have not done the research, so I'm speaking from observation and personal communication, not from a scientific survey. But you would probably find as many as 60% or more African-American women still have Caucasian male OBGYNs or general practitioners.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're lying on a mat or a cot in a doctor's office and your feet are in a stirrup, you don't know what's being done to you. And it is not a wise man. Please hear what I'm about to say. It is not a wise man that will allow another farmer to plow in his field. Not unless he wants weeds or unwanted things in his field. F-I-E-L-D.
Yes,
sir. You see. And so when you see many what population in the U.S. probably outrank every other population in the U.S. with sickness and disease? The answer is most likely the African American woman.
Right.
And so if this is true, then where is all of this disease, sickness originating? You see?
Yes.
So when you don't have a man in a home, in a house, then there is no one there to serve the purpose of a husband. Definition of husband. Husband is a gerund. It's a verbal noun, which means that you don't get a husband just because you go down to the courthouse and get a marriage certificate. That does not make that man a husband. It means that there has to be an action that has taken place before the definition of the word husband is met. And when there is a husband in the house, then you don't have all of the rampant behavior going on in the house. There is someone there to monitor things, and there is someone there to set borders. Borders are set, then you don't have things that just run in every direction at will. And I believe that once this is returned to the African-American community, then the numbers of disease among our women will drop drastically. But every farmer now who wants to plow can come and plow in that field. So when the weeds start growing in your field, then it's not magic and it's not a coincidence that the weeds are growing. Keep every farmer out of your field, and you won't have all of the diseased plants growing in your field. Now, I said something if people are listening.
It's beautiful. And it just makes sense. So I'm going to use – go ahead.
No, go ahead, sister, please.
No, I was just going to say that I know for me, I've changed about maybe 20 years ago, and that's all I will allow a medical doctor is a black female to help me through and, you know, give my checkups and things like that. And I've made some other changes in my life, but it seems like I'm healthier as a result of that, too. We've got a couple of callers that have some statements, so I'm going to take them and then we can come back, if that's okay with you, to you were getting ready to make a statement. Did you want to go ahead and do that first? Or
No, ma'am. Let them come in.
Okay. Caller 678-862. Would you give us your name and your comment or concern, please?
Greetings. Good evening.
Greetings.
I'm Antoinette. And how are you both this evening?
I'm well, sister.
Feeling good.
Good.
Thank you.
Good, thanks. I commend you and your journey, brother. I am from originally Washington, D.C., and I distinctly recall the time with Minister Farrakhan and the group of Muslims that actually they used to meet over on Kenilworth Avenue in Northeast Washington. And we sort of chronicled the news concerning the study that I think it was Dr. Aline you were speaking of was doing at the time. And, you know, the research that was being done, the findings, the things that they were sharing with the members of the community pertaining to the progress and the way that they saw being able to help, you know, the community and the larger audience with the HIV AIDS and epidemic. It was really commendable. And, you know, it's sad that when you get to a certain junction in your research and your quest to help people, and you find that you're up against the same type of bureaucracy, it can be heartbreaking and devastating. And so, I mean, some of the people that we imagine with money could drop $100,000, like, in one night, you know, making it rain at a club or something, you know? But to stay on this path that you're on with your studies and findings, I just commend you, because I remember the day and the time. And fast forward, listening to you and even being here in the Atlanta area and knowing that the part that the Center for Disease Control has played in some of this is also questionable. And so, you know, I would just like to give thanks for you and your work. Me personally, I've had a primary care, and my medical doctors have been female doctors for a very good while. I did get an opportunity to do some study with some other notables. And, of course, there's always a concern for how our doctors that are onto something, all of a sudden, you know, they drop like flies. So it's, you know, it's an ongoing quest. And like you said, how people can be so interested in standing in line wrapped around a corner to buy a sandwich. But when it comes to things of note concerning health, and there's nothing wrong with standing in line to buy a sandwich for 4 hours, but I'm just saying, when it comes to the critical things that we need in our community and to be conscious and aware of, sometimes, you know, we just aren't there. And so I just want to say thank you, and, you know, continue your good works, because I know you're studying and the things you're finding in your research are very worthy. And, you know, they can save a lot of lives. So, yeah, it's not something that's talked about much anymore in terms of HIV and AIDS. But anybody that's thinking and is conscious realizes that there is a war against us. And it seems like it's hitting, when I say us, you know who I mean. And it seems like it's hitting us from all sides. So that's all the more reason for us to remain diligent and vigilant, and to stay focused on, you know, how we save ourselves. So on that note, I'm going to say thank you, Sandy, and to you, your guests, Dr. Muhammad, and keep up the good work, brother. Peace and blessings to you both.
Thank you, sister. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Anthony. So our next caller is area code 940535. You want to give us your name and your comment, question, or concern, please.
Thank you, Sandy and Doctor. Wow. Thank you. Thank all of us. Hey, this is what I got to say. the unknowing. Wow. I'm going to jump in there and I'm going to say, what a blessing to me and others. I'm one of the ones that came through the land and I got here today like we all did, but I always was aware. No, I don't have that super education. No, I didn't do the super schooling and all that, but I was just a natural given. And I love the Creator who made us all. And I pray to the Creator and ask for forgiveness daily. And I keep on moving in the land. And, yeah, I come through the land and I do my very best with the people that I meet. And, wow, the response I get is beautiful. And I'm always waiting for my next step. And I love what the Creator does to me and all of us. And like what you know and what you've given us, what a blessing, what an uplift, what a goodness. And the whole world. So I'm going to continue to do the best that I can do. And then I'll be having a ball. I'll be saying, wow, the Creator, one day I might, wow, be in Samson's family. I already is. And then I just jump over the mountain. You know, I'll be thinking like, I said, wow, what the Creator going to do with me? So that's the way I think and that's the way I move. And all of us, and I'm one of them, what a blessing with all of us. That love what the Lord tell us to do, the Creator that created the whole world. I believe in the Creator that made every last one of us. And though we act like we do, and though we act like sometimes we don't want to see, I want to always see, and I want to always do my very best. And, brother, wow, heavy weight, what a blessing. And I love that you bring it to me and to all of us. And I'm going to continue on that path, and I'm that one that the Creator just gave it to naturally. Like he did us with the medicines and like you got it and our peers and we give it to each other. And I'm going to continue to stretch it out and run. I'll be running after the Creator. I don't ever want to be left here or I don't want to be left in the grave. So I love what you're doing, what you're saying, and I'm drinking it. I always drink the best of the best of the best. And you one of the best and what a blessing. And hey, you, a lot of love.
Thank you, Sister Eve. We've got one more caller, area code 470-278. Would you give us your name and your question, comment, or concern, please? Hello, 470-278. Did you put your phone on mute, maybe? Hello, 470-278.
Good evening.
Okay, I'm going to leave your line open. Oh, okay.
Good evening.
Hey.
This
Good
is
evening.
Diane.
Thank
hey, you
Diane.
So much. Thank you so much, Sandy and Brother Victor Muhammad. Thank you so much. What a blessing. I was so glad I tuned in this evening. And as I was listening to you, brother, and you said that was talking to a group of the doctors that spent all that money, didn't bring anything back. I was waiting to hear you say that you're going to get a lab. But, you know, I just want to know, you know, what could we do? How can we help? You know, we could just want to know how we could help.
Sure, that's a good question, and that is indicative of a person who's awake, because Billie Holiday used to sing a song, Mama may have, and Papa may have, but God bless the child who's got his own. And when you look across the diaspora of the civilized world, the only people who don't have their own and is 100% dependent on every other human being is the so-called African-American, you see. And so we place our destiny in the hands of others, and we rely 100% on people to provide us our underwear, our bathroom tissue,
and everything else that we use, including our food. And so the solution is to put our destiny under our own control so that we don't have to depend on anyone. And so I have a nonprofit called Life Sciences of Washington. It was started in 1994 when I was going through Southeast Washington, D.C., and doing lectures to the transgender community, because these people were infected with HIV and suffering from the disease, and many of them were dying simply out of fear, because, you know, they didn't know what was going on, and they were being told that to get their affairs in order, you're going to die, and all of this kind of stuff. And because I could speak science, but I could also speak homeboy, then I could go and talk with them and put the molecular biology in a perspective that they could understand.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
it helped them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it became so effective that I said, well, if I'm going to be doing all these lectures, let me create an entity where I can do it under my umbrella and not necessarily under someone else's. So I created Life Sciences. Now, long story short, I think that it is time. Well, I don't think. I know it's time that in the African-American community, we start doing work that benefit us. Not that we're going to eliminate anyone else, and not that someone who comes to us of any race or gender or class who needs help, we won't help them. I'm not saying that. But we have problems that are germane to the African-American community.
Yes.
Therefore, we need to be like every other people, the Jews, the Asians, the Koreans, the Italians. We need to be just like them. We need to take our destiny under our control and investigate and invest in those things that ill affect us. We have mental health issues that are germane to us, because no other human being in the annals of history have been dehumanized and turned into a new entity.
Yes.
Except us.
Right.
And so I can give you my email address,
okay,
and you can email me, and anyone who wants to make a donation, you can make a tax-deductible donation. Because Life Sciences of Washington is a nonprofit entity. It is an IRS tax-exempt entity. And so I think that if we had at least $100,000 just to get a bathroom science laboratory, I would like for you all to give me 3 to 6 months. And the products that we would generate in 3 to 6 months, we believe that they would stand on their own, and we believe that in 3 to 6 months you'd see the kind of products that we would generate, and we've already created some. We generate about once a week, we generate a scientific article on health, that if you read it and do what it says do, then you'll get the benefits, and they're not long. Many of them are not even one page. And you know why they're not long? Because the truth is simple.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't take a whole lot of talking if you're speaking the truth.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got to take a long time to explain it, then probably you either don't know it or you're lying.
Mm-hmm.
So my email address is Victor, V-I-C-T-E-R. Make sure you put the E in it because it's Ebonicized now. It's Victor, V-I-C-T-E-R, Muhammad, M-U-H-A-M-M-A-D, Muhammad@gmail.com. Victor, V-I-C-T-E-R, dot Muhammad, M-U-H-A-M-M-A-D, @gmail.com.
Got it.
The name of the nonprofit is Life Sciences of Washington.
Life Sciences of Washington? Sciences?
Sciences, right. Plural. Life Sciences of Washington, Incorporated. And we had a website, but we weren't bringing in enough money to even keep the website up. So right now it's down.
Okay. And you know, you said, I mean, you deal with even more than HIV. It's just all the things that we're affected with or infected with.
We deal with everything that affects the so-called African-American community, because one of the things that we've been doing in the Atlanta area with the Concerned Black Clergy is bringing them up to speed on the fact that mental health in community.
Mm-hmm.
The divorce rate in the African-American community is the highest in the world. Now, what kind of problems are coming from that? And why is it so high? And what's being done to rectify it? And who's got the results to prove that you're doing something? You see, so we can stand up on Sunday and pontificate about all of these things, but what proof do you have that you're doing something, and what proof do you have that it's effective?
Right.
And how can you treat the biological diseases that the people are suffering from when the people's hearts and minds are messed up? Because if you've ever gone through a divorce, it takes you 7 years just to recover from that.
Yeah.
So who's being treated for that?
Hardly anybody.
You see, so we're in a mess, sisters. And the proper attention that needs to be paid to these maladies that are affecting the African American community, they're not being taken care of. Because you could argue successfully that all these things are not happenstance.
Well, like you said, it's, forget coincidences.
No, it's not a coincidence. But, you know, but when you have men in a community, then it doesn't matter whether a thing is a coincidence or not. When you have men in a community, the men take charge and
right.
bring about mm-hmm. change.
Right.
You see? And one of the ways when you know that you're dealing with a man or an African-American male is that a man doesn't ask permission to do what needs to be done. He
right
does
on.
It because the fact that he's a man, he's already endowed with the position, with the authority to do what needs to be done.
That's just a man,
yes.
brother.
Yes.
I can hear you.
Yes.
I'm sorry, sis.
Yes, that's good. That's it.
Yeah. Oh, this has been powerful, just like I knew it would be.
Thank you.
You're welcome, sister.
Yeah. So we've got about 10 minutes more. So I want to ask Dr. Muhammad, Victor, if you have. I know you've given us some steps already with the doctors and taking charge of ourselves, our lives, our livelihood. Is there any additional steps or suggestions that you would give us about taking our power back? You know, like first steps or, you know, what to include, how to teach our children. What would be your advice?
Well, in order to destroy a people, you must first come in and destroy the men. And slavery effectively did that. And unlike the Jews and what they went through in Nazi Germany and the Japanese in what they endured during World War II, both of those populations were repaired after they had suffered their atrocities. But the so-called African-American community has never been repaired. In 1922, when Congress met in Washington, D.C., to discuss and hold hearings on the allocations of funding to build Howard University, it's in the congressional record. And a congressman from West Virginia said, "Why should we allocate funds to educate the Negro when we will never teach them the science of business, the science of mating, and the science of warfare?" Now, why would this congressman from West Virginia make such a statement? Why would you not teach the Negro the science of business, mating, and warfare? Why are they necessary? And the answer is, these are three of the major sciences that are necessary for making a civilized, self-determined human being. When you look at the divorce rate among the African American now, is it an anomaly that the divorce rate is what it is? If you don't know the science of mating, then how can you effectively choose a mate? So when we get married, we're firing in the dark. It's just like shooting in the dark. You hope that you get a good husband. You hope that you get a good wife. Because if you don't know the science on how you choose a mate, then how can you choose one? So the divorce rate among the African American is as high as it is because nobody ever taught you how to choose a husband or a wife. You don't know what you're doing. And it is the same as if you go out and buy a lion or a tiger. If you don't know the nature of the lion or the tiger, you are bringing something into your home that can destroy you. So when a man goes and get a woman, or when a woman goes and get a man and bring them into your home, and you don't know how God made a woman, and you don't know how God made a man, you've gone and gotten something and brought it into your house that you do not understand. This is the main reason we clash with one another. Because you have a human desire to be with the opposite sex, but you don't know the nature of the opposite sex. Because that information has been kept away from you and me. So we have to start with fundamental things of civility. What is civility? What is civilized? One having culture, refinement. One having knowledge of all of the sciences of life, medicine, jurisprudence, law, finance, business, economics, agriculture, mental health, sociology, politics, religion. These are all of the sciences of life. Now, is it any wonder that we operate on the level that we do in America? When we don't know any of these sciences? And just because we go to some college or some university and get a degree, we're still not qualified. Because in college and universities, the colleges and universities are nothing but job-making tools. It gives you enough information so that you can function on a job working for someone else. A college doesn't give you an education. A university doesn't give you an education.
it gives you enough human resources so that you can go and go to IBM and sit in an office all day working for IBM, working for this company, working for that company, so that you'll know how to conduct yourself on the job.
Yes, yes.
So these are the fundamental things that we have to do. The first thing that we got to do is repair the man and repair the woman. Then after the man and the woman is going through a reparatory process, then you got to repair the family. Because in the 1960s, the black family was broken down. And welfare was the conduit that the government and that this society used to destroy the black family. And it's never been repaired. So we can get all the money we want. We can go and get all the Infiniti Q50s that you want. But until you get a family and until you get a mate, you don't have nothing.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
You are welcome.
Message received. Message received. Incredible. Like I told you guys, Dr. Victor Muhammad is going to break it down. Nobody on this, listening to this show, should have any questions. He just told us what we needed. And please, whoever that is, watch your background noise. We're almost finished. We only have about 90 seconds left. And I just wanted to thank Dr. Muhammad once again for taking the time to educate us about taking our power back and making sure that we understand the necessity, the steps that we need to take, and that he was deliberate in breaking a lot of this down for us and the work that he's been doing and with our help that he can continue to do. So his contact information is Victor, V-I-C-T-E-R, dot Muhammad, M-U-H-A-M-M-A-D, at gmail.com. And his website, his nonprofit organization, is called Life Sciences of Washington. Make a donation, be in contact with Dr. Muhammad. Let's support him. Let's see what we can do to change this thing around. And please use the wise counsel that he gave us tonight to increase and improve your life. So with that, I'm going to close, and we'll see you guys next week. And with so much love and appreciation to you, Dr. Muhammad, we certainly learned a great deal from you tonight. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
You're welcome, welcome, welcome.
He's got a sense of humor, too. So we're going to get out of here, everybody. I love you. I'll see you next week. Bye. Bye.